Another 40 minutes, but we finally made the top, and I reined up the two mules beside him on the hard-packed dirt, then draping the lead over a dying white pine, I dismounted. I moved to the pack mule, folded the canvas cloth aside, pulled one of the AKs out and showed it to him. Romanian MD-65 with the underfolder stock and 30-round mags. There are two of them. He took one, holding it up and examining it.
Cuerno de chivo, horn of the goat, that's what the narcos call these things. It refers to the curve of the magazine.
He shook his head.
Now, what is she doing with something like this?
I thought maybe you might know.
Why would you think that?
Proximity. He shook his head. I've never met her before. Your sister referred to it as the orphanato.
The orphanage?
He nodded.
The place is well known as a depository for unwanted children and has been since long before I was born.
Maybe the old woman doesn't know these things were there.
Who else do you know that has access to that place? Difficult to say. Traffickers roam this area, as you saw.
He handed the assault rifle back to me.
They could belong to anyone.
You don't think this is how she makes her money, then?
No, I don't think so, but these days, who knows?
I placed the weapon back in the pack bag, careful to cover it up. There were also spam cans of ammo, 122 grain, full metal jacket, 20 rounds a box, 32 boxes, 640 rounds per can, 1,920 rounds.
You brought all of them?
He did. I patted the pack mule, stroking his rump. Do you know how to operate an AK?
Yes, do you?
He smiled as I re-secured the pack with a few knots.
Then this is a windfall.
I suppose. I looked at him. When I was heading down here, a friend gave me some advice. He said to not trust anybody. The police, military, anybody. Aiden swung a leg up on the horn and turned completely toward me.
Good advice.
I steadied him long enough to enforce the question. So I'm going to ask you once, just once, can I trust you? A smile crept onto his lips, and he waited before answering.
Let me ask you a question in return. You saw the way the man Culpepper was looking at me in Torero, when you distracted him by disassembling his weapon?
He leaned forward, still smiling.
If you hadn't done that, do you think he would have killed me?
I gave it actual thought.
Yep, I do. When he attacked you later, do you think he would have killed you if my sister had not intervened?
Yep, I do. He turned back in the saddle and started off.
Then you have your answer.
I supposed I did. I climbed back on my mule, Gigder, and we were off. The terrain wasn't getting any easier, and I was pretty glad to have the mules. We appeared to be above the tree line, where only a few scrub pines and cactus pushed their way through the rocky rubble that rose in a straight incline toward the dark mountains on the horizon, chest high creosote bushes stretching in front of us like a stunted and dead forest. The sky was clear, and the temperature hot as the sun rose above us, and I slipped my Ray-Bans over my eyes and settled in for the ride, thinking about what Culpepper had told us and about how I wanted to use that information. Aiden had listened as I'd questioned the man, but had said nothing. I'd gotten a good idea of the place, and even drawn up diagrams and a few sheets of thick paper from, of all things, a Big Chief notebook. I thought about my friend Henry Standing Bear, and more than anything wished that he were here. This operation was his cup of tactical tea, the kind of thing he'd trained to do with the recon groups he'd worked with in special operations in Vietnam. But at the moment he was back on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, standing guard over Lola. I contemplated dragging the notebook out, but until we got there and I saw the lay of the land myself, I didn't see any reason to commit to a plan of action. It was frustrating, but if Culpepper was lying through his loosened teeth, then we were back to square one. As Aiden had said, the Kalashnikovs were a windfall, but I didn't trust luck, good or bad. As the old Marine saying goes, luck can't replace preparation and a good strategy. All I wanted was Katie back.
The trail straightened up the shelf leading through a pass that looked like a blocked-in area, surrounded on three sides by mountain steeps. The perfect place for a monastery or a fortress. There was a fork, the first I'd seen, when we'd topped the chasm where the river flowed. Where's that go? It had been more than 3 hours since either of us had spoken, so it was only natural that Aidan was slow turning in the saddle, finally cocking an elbow on his cantle. Excuse me? I pointed to the right. That trail there, where does it go? He turned the other way to look. To my ranch, eventually. Glancing around, I wasn't assured by the options. If we beat a hasty retreat, there isn't going to be much of an opportunity to cover our tracks. He laughed, mirthlessly. I wouldn't worry about it. If we come back this way, they will assume we've taken the trail back to the orfanato we took to get here. I studied the road less traveled. Why? Because only a madman would go that way. I told you, we blew up the bridge, and the one that remains is barely passable, and then you have to cross the desert. If we return the way we came, and they're following us, what will happen to the old woman and the children at the orfanato? He reined in his mule and studied the ground as I pulled up beside him. They will kill them all, which is why it is important to cut the head off the snake so that it can no longer bite. Bedard. Yes. His eyes came up to mine. You may be here for your daughter, but I am here to kill a man before he kills my land. There used to be an unwritten law that if you were not part of the drug trade, you were safe. But that is no longer the case. He glanced around. Sooner or later, his people will come for me and mine. And that is something I cannot allow. With a man like this, you have two options. You either leave him to do as he wishes, or you kill him. Why are you telling me this again? Because the seer is right. You should have killed Culpepper. Why didn't you? It's difficult to explain. I mean, if it had been during the fight, I would have if I'd had to, but with him incapacitated, it just didn't seem right. I've spent most of my life making judgments and living a moral code as much as I am able. I won't kill anybody, I don't have to. Like me, you are a soldier. That's different. He studied me some more. You may have to learn. Your sister hasn't. She had the opportunity to shoot Culpepper in the face, but she didn't. He was valuable at that point, and she knew it. He turned his mule and started off. If you think my sister will not kill outright, you are a very foolish man. I sat there for a moment more, and then started after him. The trail rounded a hill to the right where I could see the mountain village about a quarter of a mile below. There was a single round stone building a little closer, then a hillside leading down to a cluster of red roof-tiled buildings and a plaza where the main road ended. There was a larger building at the rear, its back pressed hard against the cliffs, that I assumed was Monasterio del Corazon Ardiente. As I'd figured, Estante del Diablo was a dead end, surrounded by rock precipices that dove 2,000 feet. One way in, one way out. I could see that metal towers had been erected in the town with work lights attached and even speakers. The place has electricity? Aidan shook his head. Generators! I reached in my pocket and pulled out the diagrams I'd made from the information we'd gleaned from Culpepper, studied the outline and compared it to the scene below. Aidan climbed off his mule. We should move back and find a place to stake the animals. I moved my own mule from the edge to an open area and nudged her next to a rock outcropping that looked familiar. I pulled the postcard from my shirt pocket and held it up. Gemelos de Roca. Must be the place. He nodded. You think they have patrols? He followed me and, as I climbed off, sorted through one of the pack bags and pulled out an impressive pair of M-19 Bellenhall binoculars. No, the one thing we can rely on is their arrogance. While I unloaded the mules, he crept back to the edge overlooking Estante del Diablo. I glanced around, but this being the only area with any grass, I figured the mules wouldn't wander far. I stacked the saddles near the rocks and began unpacking the large canvas bags, putting the contents into smaller piles. When I finished, I brought a canteen over and joined Aiden at the drop-off. What's going on?
Nothing. I see almost no movement. Things will pick up this evening when the festival begins.
He lowered the Vietnam-era binoculars and handed them to me. That will be the time when we can approach, when there's cover. I could see a few people moving about, but not many.
The building to the right is a sale barn?
Yes. The monastery used to be famous for their goats that produced milk and cheeses. Buyers used to come from all over the provinces.
I wonder what they use it for now.
I don't know. He studied the layout. But I am sure your daughter will be in the monastery at the back.
Yep, it looks like the only way there would be to go behind the sale barn and along the cliffs at the rear.
There are walls.
Some, but that's better than the main road and the plaza, where we're bound to get spotted before we can get in there.
I lowered the binoculars. When will people be arriving for the festival?
All through the afternoon, I would imagine.
I handed him the M-19s, and after one last glance at the mules, who were loitering and munching the straw like grass, I lay back and pulled my hat over my face.
Let me know when things start hopping.
Does that look like a patrol to you?
I was pretty much awake before, but I was fully awake now that Aiden had spoken.
Where?
I snatched the hat from my face, rolled over, and looked in the direction he indicated. There were three armed men who had rounded the sale barn and then had stopped in an opening by the wall to smoke. The light was just beginning to fade, and there was a great deal more activity in the village, where vehicles of all stripes lined the sides of the approach road. There was an older man in a cowboy hat, and two younger men, practically teenagers, who were following what most certainly was the trail that led to the right and up the hillside toward us. I glanced around at the lack of cover and realized that the precipice where we'd made the climb was at least a half mile away.
Well, hell.
Aiden followed my eyes.
Where can we go?
You can just continue on toward the monastery, but I'm going to be hard to explain. I glanced at our pack animals.
And if they're shooting, those mules are going to scatter like magpies.
Aiden followed me as I began gathering up the animals and putting them in a line toward the trail about 20 yards from the rock outcropping.
What are you doing?
I'm going to hobble them and then half-cover myself over by those rocks with my hat over my face. When they get up here, you tell them that I started celebrating a little early and that you're just waiting for me to sober up enough so that we can keep going.
What about the guns on the pack mule? I'll hide them behind the rocks.
He glanced back down the trail where they would be coming.
And if they find them?
I pulled Henry's buoy from the small on my back. He nodded and began unloading the AKs from the inside canvas packs as I drew out a cotton blanket from the other side and draped it over my shoulders.
I'm thinking if they figure out I'm Anglo, they're probably not going to go for the Bob Lilly thing up here, so don't even try it.
He nodded, carefully placing the rifles nearby in a small opening behind the rocks where they wouldn't be seen.
I won't. But what do we do if we have to shoot them?
I settled in and took a seat amid the rocks in what shade there was, pulled the blanket up around my face, and settled my hat, the big knife held loosely.
We'll cross that bridge after we burn it.
As an afterthought, I leaned forward and stuck a few fingers down my throat, heaving but bringing nothing up. Aiden stood over me.
What are you doing?
Repeating the procedure, I brought up the breakfast the old woman had made for us, and the doc jumped back. Clearing my throat, I spat on the ground beside me.
One thing I've learned in almost a half century in law enforcement, drunks puke, and it disinclines closer inspection.
Are you going to piss your pants next?
I nodded, pulling my hat back over my face. If need be.
I listened as he joined the mules, pulled some personal items from the packs, and laid them on the ground with his own blanket. We waited longer than I would have thought to hear their voices on the trail. Arguing as they approached, it was pretty obvious that stealth wasn't part of their program, until they saw Aiden and the mules and became silent.
Hola!
Aiden sounded annoyed, and I figured that was a good play. He commented on the weather, as near as I could tell, and asked them about their day. The older one did the talking, and he didn't seem too suspicious until one of the younger men pointed at me. Aiden let loose with a stream of curses, and then began complaining about his drunken companion, and even though I didn't understand that much of it,
I could tell the performance was at an Academy Award level. The younger men stepped in closer and commented on the puke, whereupon Aidan cursed again, and the two began laughing. The older one barked at them and then went back to asking Aidan questions, which the doc passed off pretty easily, until one exchange that sounded a little sharp. I tightened my grip on the stag-handled knife. One of the teenagers had drifted over toward me and said something, and even with my limited vocabulary, I could tell he wanted to wake me up so he could watch me suffer. The older man approached, and it seemed as though the three of them were no more than 10 feet away. Aidan said something again, but the response was dismissive. There was a brief conversation about hats among the three, and I saw the muzzle of an AK dip under the brim of mine. Slowly lifting the knife under the blanket, I was getting ready to move, just as a burst of automatic fire ripped the air like a thick sheet of satin being torn. Brushing my hat aside, I looked up as two of them fell, the third scrambling backward and tripping over me as I brought the butt of the Bowie against the back of his head. I relieved him of his rifle and glanced at the two dead men on either side of me. The mules were crow-hopping, scared but still restrained by the hobbles, and Aidan was holding one of the Kalashnikovs, the muzzle still smoking. "They would have killed you." We dragged the bodies and lodged them against the rocks in an upright position and then gripped the one I'd knocked in the head. The mules had settled and Aidan had begun reloading the pack saddles with the armament, keeping the AK for himself. "We have to move quickly. They would have heard the gunfire from the monastery." "Will they send another patrol, do you think?" "Who knows? With these people, weapons are like firecrackers. And with the celebration of the dead, there's a lot of shooting." A gesture toward the bodies. "But these three will come up missing."
"At one point, yes."
I rolled the second teenager over and nudged the American soccer team ball cap from his head and examined the goose egg just behind his ear. "What do you want to do with this one?"
"Cut his throat."
I looked at the kid. He was maybe 15.
"I can't do that."
Aidan aimed the AK.
"Then I'll shoot him."
"No."
"Ah, right. Better not make more noise."
He looked toward the precipice that we had just climbed.
"We can throw him off the cliff. Less noise."
"No."
He stared at me as I gestured toward the unconscious young man.
"He's a kid.
And he's the one who would have likely shot you first."
"Maybe."
I studied the teenager. Back in my country, he'd be bird-dogging chicks and saving up to buy a car.
"And in my country, he is selling poison and killing people and then skinning their faces and sewing them on soccer balls."
I stared at him.
"They do that?"
"Yes."
Still holding the knife, I stepped between them. "Well, I can't let you kill him. It would be the same as doing it myself.
A sin of omission?
Something like that." Aidan shook his head and continued loading the weaponry onto the mules. I kneeled and slapped the kid's face a few times before his hand came up to brush mine away. He groaned, his eyelids fluttering, and then his eyes settled on me.
"Howdy."
He started to move but stopped when I scratched the side of my neck with the point of the Bowie knife.
"Hablo usted inglés?"
Yeah.
"What's your name?"
He accented the second syllable.
"Ivan."
"Ivan, we've got a problem here. But I'm thinking you and I want the same thing."
He glanced around, getting the lay of the land, his eyes staying on his two dead companions.
"What's that?"
"I'd like to keep you alive. Do we agree on that?"
His eyes came back to mine.
Yeah.
I pointed at Aidan.
"He wants you dead.
And he's made a pretty convincing argument." The kid was silent.
"You know who I am?"
He nodded.
"The gringo, the ranger from El Norte."
"Sheriff."
I cleared my throat.
"You know why I'm here?"
He paused.
"No."
"You lie to me again and I'll kill you myself."
He nodded.
"They have your daughter."
"You've seen her?"
"No, they keep her in the monasterio. Upstairs, guarded in the central room on the second floor. Two at the doors of the plaza, two at the stairs, and two at the door where they are keeping her. One of them fell asleep 2 days ago, and they killed him."
Figuring I'd check some of the information I'd gotten from Culpepper, I questioned him a bit more. I'm an imam. I don't know. Only started working with these guys 3 days ago.
I nodded. When does the party start?
He shrugged. There's no time. It will just build and happen and then go on through tomorrow.
I met his eyes and stayed there. Your English is very good, Ivan.
He smiled for the first time. I have an aunt who lives in Tucson, and I spent 2 summers in your country doing landscaping.
I reached out and took hold of his chin, turning his face toward his 2 companions. You should have stuck with the landscaping. I released him, and he slowly turned back to me. I want you to think about something that's going to be hard for you to understand. These guys are dead. Dead and not coming back. There's no reset, no do-over. There's nothing. They are gone. I gestured toward the bodies. And if they could talk, they would tell you only one thing, that it's better to be alive. You got me?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I stared into his eyes, looking for a comprehension that wasn't there.
No, you don't. You think you are invincible.
I shook my head and gestured for Aiden to come closer. Doc, the face-skinning thing. How do they do it? Leading one of the mules, he kneeled down next to me, tracing a finger under the kid's jaw and taking the buoy from my hand.
It truly is an art form. You start by making an incision at the top of the head, where you punch through tissue but hit the bone of the skull rather quickly. When you meet the bone, you cut down to the neck, which makes a horrible scraping noise, but you get used to it.
He reached around behind the young man and touched the base of his skull with a knife. Then you jam your thumbs under the skin and begin unwrapping. Ivan tried to move back, but there was nowhere to go. Then you peel the skin over the forehead and begin dispatching the eyelids, which is something of a gooey mess, but nothing compared to the nose, because you have to take some of the cartilage to keep the shape. The knife blade came up, tracing the kid's face. The mouth is tricky because it's hard to retain the shape there, too, you know? The kid heaved, just a bit. Then you have to decide how much of the scalp you want, but that depends on the soccer ball. The kid gagged. Aiden nodded. For most faces, a full-size soccer ball is too big, so they tend to use the balls they make for juniors. I examined Ivan's head. Do you do it before or after they're dead?
Depends. You can do it with them alive, but you need a couple of men to hold them down.
He gestured with the big knife.
I can show you if you would like.
We'll wait. I took the buoy and turned back to the kid. The way I figure it, we can let you go down the trail we just came up, never to come back here, and you move on to a better life, or you can have some random kids in some nameless village scoring goals with your face. He stared at me. Which is it going to be? He took a moment to speak, and his voice was a little shaky.
I will go down the trail.
Smart choice, but remember, don't turn back. I stood along with Aiden, and we looked down at him. There are men in the village you just came from who are going to die in the next 24 hours. And you don't have to be one of them. He wanted to stand, and I let him. He was careful not to step on his comrades.
Okay.
I hid the stag-handled knife.
One more thing, Ivan.
Yes?
Throw your buddies off the cliff.
Do you believe he had the nerve to ask for one of the mules?
We shared the last of the canteen water and watched as the kid disappeared down the trail we had come up. You don't think we should have given him water? Aiden shook his head and hung the canteen over his shoulder.
There's a river. I don't think he can miss it.
You can lead a teenager to water. Letting the words trail off as I gathered my mule and walked her back toward the outcropping, I looked up at the sun and saw the image of 2 women, one of them all dressed up for her senior prom, being twirled at arm's length by her mother in our tiny rented house. The moment so brilliant, I was sure that, like looking at the sun, I would most certainly go blind.
Are you all right? I turned to look at Aiden. What time would you say it is?
He glanced at his wristwatch. 2. How long before they send out another patrol to look for this one?
Aiden got his own mule as I rounded up the 2 pack animals, preparing to pony them behind me.
Who knows?
Think we can work our way down the trail they came up and get behind the wall that leads to the monastery before dark?
Not without being seen, but with the amount of people arriving, it is possible we can approach without appearing too suspicious.
We walked to the precipice and looked down where more vehicles were parked and the streets showed a little more activity. Aiden pointed to the round building.
There's some activity there also, but if we can get past those 2 spots, it could be done.
He looked again. We can't get the mules over the wall, so they will have to stay near the sail barn, but they are mules, so no one should question their presence.
I climbed on my ride and patted her withers. I'm beginning to like my gal.
Aiden climbed aboard his mule and swung around to look at me.
Hopefully you will see her again tonight, when we are making a quiet and leisurely escape with your daughter.
He looked past me, and I turned, hoping I wouldn't see that the teenager was stupid enough to be coming back, but the trail was empty.
Today is the Dia de los Inocentes, so you have done your part.